And let's see. I'm the only one not there because I was fussing with the recorder. All right. All right, Deuteronomy chapter 14, and we'll start with verse 21. Now, Deuteronomy, again, is where Moses, it's often called Second Law, because what Moses is doing is he's taught them the law for 40 years in the wilderness, and now he's standing there, he's got all Israel before him, they're getting ready to go into the Promised Land, and he's going over all of it again for him. So, in verse 21, he says, "Ye shall not eat of anything that dieth of itself." Okay? "Thou shalt give it unto the stranger that is in thy gates, that he may eat it, or thou mayest sell it unto an alien." Now that's fascinating. It gives you an idea how God saw his people as different. The idea that something died of itself, what's that mean? You know, you go out there and the old cow died in the field. God told the Jews, don't eat it. All right? You see that fish that's flopped up on the rock there, died of itself, don't eat it. That whale that beached itself off the coast, don't eat it. But you can sell it to strangers, they can eat it. All right? You can sell it to the aliens, they can eat it. But you're to be a holy people. You're to be different than them. You know, there was an essay written many years ago. It's been ascribed to a few different people, but it's called "Others Can, But You Can't." Others can, but you can't. What do we mean by that? You know what? In the process of trying to live a Christian life, you're going to find certain things that you can't do. You just can't do it. You've tried, you've watched other, you watch good Christians do it, yet when you do it, it defiles you. It ruins your family. It ruins your relationship with the Lord. Or sometimes just subtly does it or whatever. And so it's that idea, well, find out what those things are. You're not a weirdo if you put certain things out of your life that other people can't do. Okay? Now, listen, I hate alcohol. I do. I've watched it destroy families. I asked a woman recently who has asked me some Bible questions. She's lived a long life, 80-some years in the Roman Catholic Church. And she was asking me this thing about alcohol again, because that's a stumbling block to a lot of people. And I put it this way, and I reminded her of some relatives we had in common whose lives were destroyed by alcohol. Just destroyed. Ruined. The idea that liquor was in their house just destroyed everything. It destroyed Christmases. It destroyed holidays. It destroyed birthdays. It destroyed family gatherings. I remember sitting with a cousin one time on Irish Hill Road in Ellicottville, and we're sitting together on a picnic table outside of the house because his parents were just drunk and cursing each other, and we didn't dare go in the house. And he was so ashamed that his parents were in that condition and such. And I just said to this woman, I said, you know, I know that you and your husband, you drank all your lives, and you never had those incidents. You never did. You always controlled it. You never had bills that didn't get paid because of alcohol. But I said, if you could have spared that family by you not drinking, would you have done it? All the families you know that so destroyed themselves. I've got a cousin that lives in Rochester, and gosh, he's just given over to the bottle and lives with it and such. His face pockmarked from the agony of him growing up in a home that way. And we could just walk through the street, person after person after person. We know families so destroyed that way. And, you know, so you say, well, I'm successful with drinking. I can do a little bit of drinking here and there. You know, did it ever occur to you that there's others that can't, and that you're just a stumbling block to them? And that they look at you and they see what you're doing and think, well, maybe I can get away with it or something. And wouldn't it be nice if everybody put that stuff away, that they didn't have to live that way and children didn't have to grow up that way? Yeah, it'd be nice. I remember sitting at the Birdwalk Tavern in Ellicottville, or really Ashford Hollow, coming out of Ellicottville, going. My father used to stop there for a beer probably every night of his life, driving home from Little Valley, coming home to Machias. I'd be so proud of myself those nights I was with him sitting there, you know, and he'd get me a milk or a Coke, and people would come up, "Russ, that's your boy." Yeah, and I'd be so proud sitting with my dad or whatever. And you want to know something? My dad paid every bill he ever had. Never was a drunk driver. Never ruined a Christmas or anything of that sort. But I know that bar was full of people that did.
You know what? They look at my dad and say, well, old Russ drinks, and he's okay. He doesn't ruin his home. You know what? No one's ever going to look at me and say that. It might be that I could put a six-pack of beer. You know, every once in a while, I'll still eat a pizza if they pay my beer. It's been 40 years since I've been here. But it's one of those things, I'll think that way. But nobody's ever going to look and say, well, you know, Pastor Askew's doing that, and he's getting away with it, and destroy their family, and ruin it, and flush it down the toilet. It's not going to happen. Okay?
Don't want to see it happen. Okay? Now, there's certain things that some people can do that you can't. Israel had some of those. That really wasn't my main point. But I want to go on and say this. It says, the very last sentence of verse 21 says, thou shalt not seethe a kid in his mother's milk. You know what that does? It gives you an idea of the nature of God. There's something about it. You go out there and you're going to take a kid lamb, a kid of the goats, and you're going to take one of these little, you're going to take this little animal and you're going to kill it. And in its own right, we understand, we're carnivores here. You know, we're hunters and, you know, we're country people and we eat meat and that kind of thing. I myself am a naturalist. If God hadn't intended people to eat at McDonald's, why'd he make it? You know? But regardless of that, you know, veal, lamb, things of that sort, those are natural things. God himself ate that with Abraham. Okay? Nothing wrong with that. But you know what God said? When you take that stinking little lamb away or that little kid away from its parents, don't use the mother's milk to boil it. Why? There's just something about that. There's just something about that in the very nature of God where he said, don't be that way. You know, a righteous man careth for the life of his beast. He cares for that kind of thing. And it just gives you a sense of the nature and what God is really like. You know, sometimes when you're trying to understand God, you read more in between the lines than you do actually reading his descriptions of himself. All right. Now, he says in verse 22, thou shalt truly tithe all the increase of thy seed that the field bringeth forth year by year. Now, Max is going to preach on giving this morning. We just took a couple of, shots in different directions there for a little bit or whatever. But I want to preach on that this morning. And I want to go into this idea. For one thing, keep this in mind. Israel had not just one tithe. They had many tithes when you go into it. It's kind of a complex arrangement. We're going to look at one of the stranger ones here today. But it says this. You're to tithe that. Verse 23. And thou shalt eat before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose to place his name there. The tithe of thy corn, of thy wine, of thine oil, and thy firstlings, of thy herds, of thy flocks, that thou mayest learn to fear the Lord thy God always. Now, you want to know one of the best reasons that a person should tithe? You learn to fear God. A tithing person will learn to fear God. You know, I hear over and over again of people who decided they were going to tithe. Now, keep in mind, there is no New Testament command to tithe. I don't want you to think there is. I'm not going to put that upon you. But I'm going to give you one of the great advantages to tithing is you learn to fear God. A person who doesn't tithe will not learn to fear God. They will not learn to do it. God gave them that tithe. Why? He said, so that you learn to fear God. That's what you learn to do. And you'll hear these stories, especially out of the older people who long ago wrestled with that thing. Long ago had to work that thing out in their own lives. Long ago settled it in their hearts how they were going to give. Long ago they did that. And they'll tell you those stories of when they initially started and some bounty came upon them and they said it's wonderful. But then usually that pendulum will swing the other way and there comes that week where it's impossible to tell. Oh no, if I tithe, I can't pay the bills. Oh no, if I tithe, I can't do this or that. And they stumble and they don't pay it. And then something happens. And you know, and you'll hear those stories. And then my vacuum cleaner broke. And when I went to buy it, it was exactly the amount of my tithe. You know? And I've heard those stories over and over again, people telling them. You know what? God's trying to teach people a fear of him. Does God need your money? No. He said, I made the cattle on 1,000 hills. I don't need your money. If I was hungry, I wouldn't tell you, he said to Psalms. That's not it at all. You know, there was a missionary that came through here by the name of Sam Snyder. He came through, I hadn't been here 6 months. Young man. I made up my mind he wouldn't make it. There's no way in the world whatsoever. For 10 years I've got letters from him. He's made it just fine. All right? And God didn't listen to me. But Pastor Haynes got some funny stories that way. He tells about missionaries. But so I don't feel too lonely in that. But you know what happened? He was here for a Sunday night. And that 10 years ago, we didn't have many people to be here on a Sunday night. We were all on Sunday nights at 6 o'clock. And, you know, we might have 15, 16 people. And Tanya and the Maurice and four that were saved. And Edmund and Debbie and a few different people here and there would be there on Sunday night. And a couple of the older people. And I warned him. I said, you know, hey, you know, this is going to be a pretty rough crowd tonight. And he came in. He did a pretty good job presenting. And we took up $119 for it. You know what he did? And at that door, he took me aside. And he said, these people need this money more than I do. And he tried to give it back to me. You know what I did? I put my hand under his shoulder and I said, these people need to give more than you need to receive. They need to give more than you need that money. You take that money. And I never forget, one of those times, maybe we'll get together and make him a quarterly missionary or something. Just, you know, it'd probably do him good to, you know, to get something from this church and understand, you know, what that meant to me at the time. But also, it's just one of those illustrations. That $119 out of those people didn't make him rich. He was willing to give it back. But you know what? This church needed to give him that money. Those people needed to learn that lesson, and they needed to learn that. Now, he goes on and he says this. Verse 24, if the way be too long for thee, so that thou art not able to carry it, or if the place be too far from thee, which the Lord thy God shall choose to set his name there, when the Lord thy God hath blessed thee, then thou shalt turn it into money, and bind up the money in thine hand, and thou shalt go into the place which the Lord thy God shall choose. In other words, you realize God wants his people to gather together. That's one of the things God wants. Periodically, God wants his people to gather. The Apostle Paul said, forsake not the assembling of yourselves together. Okay? When they get together, don't forsake it. Be there when God's people are there. And he said, hey, what if you live so far away? All right, we have people drive an hour and a half to get here. We have people drive an hour to get here, whatever. We have people drive 50 minutes to get here. Different folks of that sort. It's kind of tough. But the thing is people who are too far away. And he said, you know what? Bind it all up in the money. And he said, I'll choose another place. You know what? That's where synagogues came from, where they'd come together and they'd have these smaller places and they'd meet and such. Now, there's a strange thing that gets said here. And he says this in verse 26. And thou shalt bestow that money for whatsoever thy soul lusteth after. Now, it's interesting because when they came together, they're feasting together. And this is where Jude actually talks about your feasts of charity that go on. And there's people who stain that. And the Apostle Paul talks about the people coming together in the house of God and such. But when these people came together, and even then you'll find that sometimes they traveled a long way. Think of Joseph and Mary traveling 3 days journey, and they don't even realize they don't have the kid with them. Ruth Ann and I did that one time. We had people visiting the house. I took off in one car. She took off in another. The people took off in another. And our guest came and had Hannah and a little baby crib. Like, oh, you forgot your baby. You know, and you know, just each one assumed the other one had taken her. And there she was, just a little baby. And but Mary and Joseph went through a similar thing to that. You know, each one thought Jesus was with them and he stayed behind. But it's a long trek to go where they go. So the Lord said, if that's the case, whatsoever your soul lusteth after, get. Why? You're all going to come together. You're going to eat together and such. What do you want? Okay. And he says in verse 26, and thou shalt bestow that money for whatsoever thy soul lusteth after, for oxen or for sheep or for wine or for strong drink. Or for whatsoever thy soul desireth, and thou shalt eat there before the Lord thy God, and thou shalt rejoice before thine household. Now listen. I know people who use that as an excuse to drink. They say, well, God wasn't against strong drink until they could have it. Now let me give you a history lesson about the United States of America. And I'm going to give you a quick history lesson. One of the reasons that people turned grain into strong drink is because it is so difficult to transport grain. Between the American Revolution and somewhere around 1820, most grain in the United States was turned into strong drink. where the whiskey rebellion came from. They would turn it into whiskey, and then the federal government taxed the whiskey, and there was a rebellion over them taxing the whiskey. My boys and I read a book together by the Oxford historian for America, where he wrote a book called What Hath God Wrought? The History of the United States from 1815 to 1845. Absolutely stunning book. I'd recommend it anyway. It's called What Hath God Wrought? And he goes in and he talks about how that America in 1815 was a nation of drunkards. Every single European visitor wrote back, this is a nation of drunkards. Everyone who came together sat and sipped corn liquor. Everyone did. Women came together and knit. They sipped corn liquor. Preachers got together. They sipped corn liquor. Everyone did. It was actually the monetary. They used it for money. And it was. And what happened, because God blessed America, people actually were only working 5.5 days a week. That was unheard of in Europe. In Europe, you worked from morning till night. You did all your farm chores all day Sunday and such. And God so blessed America that people were actually taking off at noon and 1 o'clock on Saturdays and going home. That had never happened in any country before. That's something that was unheard of in human history. Not only that, men were often getting home before the sun was down. And what happened with no television, no anything else, and such, men were sitting around and drinking, and it became a nation of drunkards. Up until that point, drunkenness had been only something the rich did. Okay, the poor would do it at festivals or something, but it wasn't a daily living. A couple things came out of that. One of them was the women's rights movement. Why? Because up until that point, when a woman married her husband, she was chattel property to her husband. Everything she owned belonged to her husband. All her legal dealings had to run through her husband. What happens if he's a drunk and he's mean to her? Well, that became a big issue. Women were beat, black and blue and such, and their goods were squandered by alcoholic husbands. And so here, especially in the state of New York, was one of the first to begin to resolve that. A woman had rights to her own property and her own ability to handle that stuff, and she had rights over how to handle a drunken husband. So one of the things that came out of that spree of drunkenness was women's rights. But the other thing was, preachers like Lyman Beecher then began to realize and said to themselves, yes, that's right, the Wesleys drank, Spurgeon drank, all right? Moody drank. A lot of people don't know that, okay? The pilgrims brought beer over on their boat and such. What? For one thing, you couldn't stop wine from fermenting. Do you realize the ability to stop grape juice from fermenting was invented by the Welches in 1888? In Westfield, New York, up until that point, if you had grape juice within 3 days, it was fermented. This idea that they only drank grape juice, you could only drink grape juice when grapes are in season. So then all the rest of the time, it's fermented. Now, you older people remember what used to happen to cider, right? Take some of that, and Grandpa would put some rinds and such in it, and stick it underneath the cellar steps or something. The boys would learn to find where Grandpa hid it, take it out there, wake up with headaches the next morning or whatever. But that was common. That's what America was like. And you know what happened? Christians were the first to realize we're destroying ourselves with this. And Lyman Beecher, through the state of New York and through Connecticut, started a thing where Christians would come and he would preach and show how awful we have deranged ourselves. We're destroying this country. And Christians would vow that we will not touch it. And they would sign something. Now, the hardest thing was even not drinking wine, because keep in mind again, that meant most of the year you're having to drink water. And water, in those days, was a dangerous thing to drink. You did not have the sanitation you do nowadays. You'd have your well. There was one time we had our well tested here. It turned out there was feces in the well. This is some years ago or whatever. Probably came from a cow field up there. No one knew where. They had to drill a new well. Why? We were drinking feces when we drank. My wife and I got typhoid fever in the Philippines. We were drinking out of a well that was good to drink out of. It had been tested. But then when Mount Pinatubo erupted and all the volcanoes and such, and volcanoes and there's earthquakes and everything going off, every day we're getting sand pouring on us like rain and everything. What happened is it broke down those barriers and our well got infected and we ended up getting typhoid fever. And why? We drank human poop. All right? That's the only way typhoid fever is spread. So in those days, people didn't like to drink water because of the health problem. So for you to stand in the back of the church and make a pledge that I will not let any strong liquors pass through me, but I'm even going to go further, I won't even let wine touch my lips. Keep in mind, how often do grapes ripen here? Maybe 1 month out of the year? You know what that meant? 11 months out of the year, you either had to drink plain water or wine. You had no choice. That's all you could do. You could not stop your grape from fermenting. It was the Welches who got on their knees and begged God to show them how to stop their wine from fermenting. And God gave them that process that where Welches was made out of in Westville, New York, 1888. It wasn't until then. So people would go to the back of that church and they would sign a list and they'd sign their name. And if they weren't going to drink even wine, they would put a T next to it. That's where we get teetotalers from. Okay? Came from those drives to stop people from doing it. What's disappointing to me is we raised up a generation of Christians who have gone back on one of the greatest movements that Jesus Christ ever did amongst English-speaking people, where Christians vowed, we won't touch that stuff. We won't have it in our homes. You'd be surprised how many people I know who name the name of Jesus Christ will sit there and sip a beer, sip a glass of wine, sip that kind of stuff. You're a disgrace to Jesus Christ. You're a traitor to Jesus Christ if you do that. You're a traitor to mankind to do that. There are so many people struggling and hurting because they can't stop. Why would you do it in front of them? Okay? Now, he says this in verse 27, and the Levite that is within thy gates, thou shalt not forsake him, for he hath no part nor inheritance with thee. At the end of 3 years, thou shalt bring forth all the tithe of thine increase with it the same year, and shall lay it up within thy gates, and the Levite, because he hath no partner inheritance, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow, which are within thy gates, shall come and shall eat and be satisfied. The Lord thy God may bless thee in all the work of thy hand which thou doest. Now, there was a lot of good that could be done with that tithe. Okay? It was given out as charity. It took care of the men of God, that kind of thing. But the best thing that came out of the tithe wasn't the money itself. It taught people to fear God. That's what it did. There's something about it. There's not many things it is close to as your own money. It just gets close to you. It just gets all over you. In the Philippines, they tell the story of a preacher asking this Filipino on the front pew, and said, if you had 1,000 cattle, would you give 100 to the Lord? Yes, I would. Okay? Well, if you had 100 sheep, would you give 10 to the Lord? Yes, I would. If you had 10 chickens, would you give one to the church? You know I got 10 chickens. All right, go with me if you would to 1 Corinthians 16. You know what I've learned? There's all sorts of people in this church, if you ever made it big, you'd give a lot of money to the Lord. You've told yourself that. And you want to know what? You won't. You know why? Because you don't give little amounts. You don't give little amounts. And when the big one comes, you won't then either. Because something will come up and it'll be a snare to you. And for some reason, you know, you won't be able to give that. You know, you won $1 million somewhere, and you thought you'd give $100,000, but your lawyer took one third of it, and it's really not as much as you thought. And, well, I'm not going to do it. And finally, you put a little bit in here. Your conscience hurts when you're open. You know, the thing is, you start with a small amount. You realize the guy that started the Caterpillar trailer and truck company and heavy equipment company started out and vowed 10% of everything he made off of that. And he was doing so well, he started giving 20%. When he died, he was giving 90% of all of his income from the Caterpillar Company to the Lord and said, I still have too much to live on. Okay? You can't outgive God. You say, well, I've tithed and I never, get ahead or anything else and such. I don't know. Maybe God has chosen you to live poor. I don't know. Okay? You know what the Apostle Paul said? He said, I have learned in whatsoever state I'm in. Not that it came natural to me. I learned in whatsoever state I'm in there with me. I learned to do that. And he says, I've learned to be abased. And you know what? We got a lot of people in here. You've done a pretty good job at that. And I mean that. I mean, I really do have some people in here that are a joy to my heart because they are on the lower percentile of earning in this country and such. And I have watched them reform their ways, and I have watched them reform their houses, and I've watched them become wise with what they do with it. And it's a joy to my heart that they're there. It's a joy to my heart. I've learned to be abased. And then he said, I've learned to abound. Say, Apostle Paul abounding, the man that wrote unto this present hour, we both hunger and thirst and are naked and have no certain dwelling place. He learned to abound. Yeah, go read the end of the book of Acts. What happened? He went to the island of Melita, and Publius there, the chief governor of the island. It's a luxurious island in the middle of the Mediterranean. Do you think the Romans sent some slack guy? No, that's an honored place to have that governorship. And he cures that guy's father, and he gets his guy. And it says he goes to Rome, and he has a hired house and hired servants. Everybody always pictures that thing in 2 Timothy, with him sitting in a dungeon and rats nibbling and stuff. No, he's in a hired house with hired servants. He's a Roman citizen under a gentleman's arrest where he has to voluntarily go in before Caesar. We know he's going to die, and he goes in to die. He says he's going in to die, but he's not in a dungeon. He's in a hired house with servants. He said, I've learned to abound. You want to know something? God will test very few people with abounding. Very few. You know what? I am sure, not experimentally, I am sure that it is by far the harder of the two to do. I'm sure of that. Okay? I'm sure of that by far it is the harder of the things to do. But the Apostle Paul said, I've learned to be abased, I've learned to abound. Okay? I've learned to do both of them. Whatsoever state I'm in, therewith to be content. You want to know what? I have some people here, you're pining that your life should change. You're pining that things could happen different. You're pining that what you're going through could be over. And you want to know something? It ain't going to be over until you're content where you are. And you want to know how you're content? You'll quit pining and you won't care that it changes.
Right.
I've tried to lie to God. Okay, I'm happy now. Change it. Sure you are. Sure. It's like your kid come. I'll be good now, Mom. Give me a cookie. You know, yeah, sure you will. But you know what? I looked around all of a sudden and realized, oh, God changed something. I hadn't even realized it. It's over. It's gone. Why didn't I realize? Because I became content with it. No longer festered and ached at me and everything. I came to the point, if I live this way forever, I'm happy. I'm content. This is the way I'm going to live. This is the way I'm going to be. And then when God's ready, God will change it on His time. 1 Corinthians 16. Verse 1, the Apostle Paul says this. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. Upon the first day of the week, let every one you lay in store as God hath prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. Now, how much did he tell them to put aside? As God hath prospered you. Do you realize that that is a proportion? That is not an amount. Okay? That is a proportion. I had a man who was not being foolish. He wasn't being judgmental. He wasn't trying to spark me to anger or anything. Challenged me about the tithe. There's no law that says to tithe. And I was able to sit down and said, you're right. There is no law that says to tithe. But here's what I go off of. It says here, as God hath prospered. You know what that means? That's a percentage. And if you're smart enough to come up with a better percentage than God did, Abraham did, Jacob did, Moses did, and everything else, you go ahead and do it. All right? You just go ahead and tell God I got a better way. But you know what? I think because I'm not that smart, I'm just not. I thought I was many a time. But when it came right down to it, God's been smarter than me and everything that's ever happened to anything we've ever did. And you know what? Some great men, some men that knew how to handle wealth, some men that also knew how to handle being with nothing. You know what they said? We're going to give 10%. That's what we're going to do. So right off the top, me and my family, 10% of what we have goes back to the house of God. It's not my, and you know what the other thing is? I am a member of the Black Creek Baptist Church. I don't just attend here, I'm a member. So that when I tithe, it goes in here. It's not one of the, well, this year I'll give it to a Chinese orphanage, and this time I'll do it. No, I'm a member here. It goes in there, it's not my money, and we as a church decide what to do with it, okay? As a church, it's God's money. It's sacred money. There's a separate thing called offerings, tithes and offerings. You know what? There's sometimes I want to give above and beyond my tithe. That's an offering. And you know what? That's mine to do. It's free will. If I want to give it to a Chinese orphanage, it goes to a Chinese orphanage. If I want to give it to a brother in the church, it goes to a brother in the church. If I want to give it to some of that sort, it goes to something of that sort. Right? There's a difference. Now,
we're going to real quickly go to the last place I want to go. Let's go to 2 Corinthians 8. We've been looking at that verse. But if I tarry long, thou knowest how thou oughtest behave thyself in the house of God. And we've really been going over some of that stuff. How to behave yourself in the house of God. Is there anybody here? I've been here 11 years now. End of this month, I've been here 11 years. Two more months, I'll be the longest serving pastor this church has ever had.
Is there anybody here that still gets into their idea that I'm here for money? Is anybody here that thinks that, you know, I'm shaking this tree because, you know, I want to get more money or whatever else? Is there anybody here that thinks that? Okay. If there is, stand up and say that. Boy, you're just in it for the money. Well, if I am, I'm the stupidest preacher you ever met. All right? I cannot think of a worse place to sit and milk than here. All right? I just can't begin to think of one. And, you know, my sister one time, she had a neighbor, ethnically disabled, Polish, but my sister was tapping her trees, and her neighbor was out there tapping a pine tree. What are you doing? Tapping a tree. My sister tried to explain to her, no, just the maple, okay. And the funny thing is, really a very intelligent woman, extremely intelligent, whatever, you know. But I would feel like her neighbor, all right? If I thought to myself, I'm here to tap you guys to get money out of you. You know what I really want? I want to see you fear my God. I want you to tremble before my God. I want you to be afraid for your lives and afraid for what you do. And I want you to be thinking about this God and the severity of this God and the mercy of this God and what He can be in His holiness. And I want that to pervade your lives and be part of your life so that you can live a life of joy. And let me tell you something. I've stumbled over so many things in life and hurt myself and hurt my family. And I know so many people that live lives with scars and hurts that they wish they'd never done. Never got into that stuff. And I would that you could forever not have that stuff in your life. Forever not have that stuff. But it's going to start. The beginning of wisdom is the fear of God. That's where it's going to come from. And you know what? God gave the tithe for you to learn to fear Him. And if for some reason you think that I'm still here just trying to shake this tree and get more money or whatever else, and that's my only motive, then you go to God and say, you know what, I'm going to tithe. Go find a Jewish orphanage somewhere. Go find something you think God's in. You put the money there and you try. Try 90 days and just say to yourself, you know what, I'm going to tithe. I'm going to take my paycheck and I'm going to look at how much it was. I made $420 this week. By the time the state got done and everybody got done and such, there's 362 of it left. But you know what? I'm going to take $42, 10% of that 420. And it's going to go in the house of God. And I'm going to try that for 90 days. I'm going to see what God does. Okay? You know what you're going to find? First of all, it doesn't make sense on a calculator. 90%, 100%. Which one's greater? 100% is greater. All right? But you know what a Christian's learned? Over and over, you'll hear the old people say, I learned a long time ago, I can live a lot better on 90% than I ever did on 100%. And learn a lot better. It's just one of those lessons you learn in life. You learn to fear God. When that 90% begins to be more, when that widow took those vessels and she poured over and over again and kept filling vessels and filling vessels and filling vessels. You know what? You learn to fear God. When Peter put the net in, and he began to pull in those great things of fish. He trembled, he feared, and he knew this was Jesus Christ. There's something about that, putting your finances on the line with the things of God, that'll teach you to fear God like nothing else ever has before. And you want to know the second thing? Your conscience, maybe, for the first time in your life, cannot be screaming at you like it is. I have a lot of people in this church whose consciences bother them over their giving. And every once in a while, they'll throw a big amount of money somewhere. Now, I'm going to end with this. Back in 1981, I had a job by happenstance. Way before I was ready, I became a manager of a major manufacturing plant. Just a strange series of things that happened. I'm like 26 years old. I'm a manager of this plant and such. And so I had to get more sales for it. We hired a salesman and different things. So we've got it going out there. And I'll never forget getting the biggest customer in South Carolina to buy from. It's an old Dana Groff, known 13 plants around the United States. Called me and he said, "John, what is this new customer?" He said, "I was so proud of myself. I just got the biggest customer in South Carolina. I was so proud of myself." And he said, "John, I didn't make my money selling to the big guys. I made my money by having 1,000 people that spend a dollar a day. That's how I made my money. You get your money off of one big guy, and you're going to have to serve him. You're going to have to kowtow to him. You're going to have to do that. Okay? That's what you're going to have to do. I want this church to grow by a lot of little people putting in their tithe, their offerings, that small amount, bringing it before God, bringing it in the fear of God, holiness, and bringing it in. And us going through those things, and let God bless this church. Pastor, would you close us?
I like the way all of you breathe.